here with Yannick Silver, and we're going to be talking about joint ventures, and we're going to go ahead and just get started right now. So question number one is, you know, what made you first decide that joint venture marketing was a good approach for you?
Quite a while ago, about 17 or 18, I got first exposed to Jay Abraham, and Jay Abraham calls it host-beneficiary relationships, and it just kind of clicked. It made total sense to me. And at that point, I was selling and marketing medical equipment at my father's company. So I went out and I did deals with a lawyer that was setting up these ambulatory surgery centers, because he was in charge of the legal work for them, and we had all the equipment that they needed to set up these surgery centers for relatively inexpensive. And so we did deals with him, and he kept referring us business, and we referred business back to him. We did deals with accountants where the guy that was selling to doctors, he specialized in physicians, and he referred people to us. And then we also had, we started to do deals with a lot of people once we really got into this idea. And, one person we did a deal with was like the Olympus rep. He had a very limited line of equipment that he sold, but he was in urologist offices all the time. And we had some equipment for urologists that they didn't carry, and you could make a referral commission on and so on. So I just started cultivating and networking and making these relationships.
Oh, I see. So that must have been about, 10 years ago that you started, isn't it?
Exactly.
So when was your first big deal?
The first big deal for the medical equipment side, or for the information publishing business?
I think probably the information publishing business is more apt conversation.
For the most recent one, for the internet side of things, for instantsalesletters.com, when it first came out, we did some smaller deals with people that became affiliates and started promoting our product once they saw how well it sold. But the first really big deal probably came, I don't know if I have the exact date, but it was probably about a year after we first released this. I think it was February 2001.
Mm-hmm.
And the details of that were, I went to a conference in Boulder, Jonathan Mizell's conference. He used to put these great conferences on, and there's probably about 150, maybe 200 people even there. And there's one guy who I wanted to meet from this big internet marketing company. I know that they had a huge list, and I thought that they'd be perfect to promote our product.
Sure.
And things just didn't really work out, and I never got to meet him in person there. And we got a list of attendees like a week after we returned home, and I saw his name on that list. I'm like, oh yeah, I definitely want to talk to him. So I just picked up the phone and gave him a call and told him some of our numbers, what we were doing in conversion rates and so on. And then I sent him over the password to take a look.
Sure.
To preview it to make sure it's something that they want to endorse.
Mm-hmm.
Then I sent him some promotional material. We ended up creating our own. And probably about 3 weeks after that, they did a test. Their list, probably about 5,000-10,000 email. The test went real well, so they went to a rollout to their list of, I think, about 100,000 emails at that point.
Great.
Yeah, that did really well, and we sent them a check for, I think, $10,000 that first month. Then they,
how exciting.
Yeah, that was pretty cool, considering we gave them a good commission rate, so I probably netted about $8,000 on that. And that was a big deal.
Yeah, it must have been a nice shot in the arm.
Yeah. And then probably about a month, I think it was the next month, they did another rollout to their list, just like a second notice, which is a really great technique that not many people do. And we sent them, I think, another $8,000 or $9,000.
That's pretty amazing. So as far as percentages go, how did the split go?
We gave them, I don't remember exactly what it was, but it was definitely above 50%, no more than 60%.
So you recommend that on people just starting out?
So if you understand, what a customer is worth to you, if you only have one product and you're never going to sell them anything else again, it'd be pretty tough to give away a majority of your profits and still be in business. But if you have other profits, if you have, I mean products, other products that you can sell to, do that list once you get them, then by all means, do anything necessary to get an endorser to do it, and use that means 50% and above.
Well, that sounds like pretty solid advice, especially for people who are just starting out. It's probably a really good idea to get the attention of anybody with a large list to be able to forego some of that initial profit to get the back end.
And Rod, it's not just giving them a big percentage. It's also having a product that really sells. That's so important.
Yeah, the whole sales process, too, that goes along with it.
Exactly. You need to have a proven sales process. And, for instance, right now I get approached all the time for people that want me to endorse their product and do all kinds of things, and really 95% of them I have to turn down, and it's because their product's not proven. They don't have testimonials and so on. They don't have a proven sales process, which is even more important. I just remember one of the last deals that I did where I endorsed someone was when he came to me is Ben Prater from Software Secrets Exposed. And he came to me and he said, okay, we have, this conversion rate, whatever it was, like 4.2% or something like that. He gave me exact numbers. He told me what his visitor value was. And then I took a look at it and I made some recommendations of things that I wanted to actually include in there. And I wouldn't endorse it until it was included. And he did that for me. And then we sent out a mailing and we did pretty well for him.
Yeah. So it sounds like you need to, as approaching somebody with a large list, probably such as yourself, that you really need to, have all your ducks in line, have everything already, at least know, have some sort of clue of what your numbers are.
Right. And, if you do that, you can totally leverage the relationship that the list owner has with his name. And the more affinity he has with that they have with their names, the better your promotion's going to go. Somebody can have a million names, but they could care less when that person endorses anything. Or another person can have 4,000 names, and they jump when they say jump.
So they better have, if they have a solid relationship, it really doesn't matter, how large the list is. You will do much better with somebody that has a relationship with their customers.
Yeah, don't always look for the biggest number.
Sure.
And even sometimes it's better to cut your teeth on smaller deals as well.
Yeah. Now, in your opinion, what do you think is the best position to be in when doing a joint venture? To be a list owner, a product owner, or a broker, and why?
I haven't done much as a broker, so I don't think that's the best position to be in. It possibly could be. But for me, I've only been in positions one or two, either the customer list owner or the product owner. And I would think those are the best positions to be in because you do have some leverage and you have control, which is more important. There's downfalls and there's upsides to each one. As a customer list owner, you're in a toll booth position, which means anyone wants to come through and access your list, they got to pay the toll, which is, that 50% split or whatever it's going to be. As a product owner, you're in a good position because you got control over your own product, and you can go out and joint venture with 50 other people and realize that people that have lists, realize that they need promotions. Most people can't keep up with the appetite of their customers for products.
Oh, wow.
So, they can, most
good products.
Yeah, exactly. Most customers are ready and willing to spend way in excess of what most people can produce, which is why our company has bought different products, we've licensed different products, we do joint ventures frequently when they meet our criteria. And, it just makes perfect sense because if you're into a topic, you're gonna be usually a voracious consumer of that topic. I don't know how many hundreds of marketing books and manuals and material out here, and I don't just buy from one person.
No, absolutely. That goes as far as any hobbies or anything. Once you get into something, you really go for it.
Right, right.
If you're serious about it.
So, as a product owner, you don't hold your hat, just don't come out with your head between your knees thinking that that, you know, the person with the list has all the control and all the power, because they don't. Because they need you almost as much as you need them.
Well, that's a good point. I think that that's excellent. Now, as far as being a broker, a lot of folks out there don't, you know, they don't have a list and they don't have a product, or at least they don't think they do. You know, a lot of people are coming in from the affiliate angle, so they have to kind of come in as a broker. It's just, that's one of those things that I think is tough for anybody starting out who doesn't have the list and they don't have the product and trying to, you know, find out where they fit into everything.
I can tell you a deal that was brokered to me, which would probably give your reader some insight. And a guy came to me as, he came as a liaison between the person with the product that had a CD-ROM and the person with the list, which is me. So he put us together, and I believe he made a 10% override on top of my 50% commission. Or 40% commission. I don't remember what it was. Might have been a
but it's in that ballpark, right?
Yeah. So he made that 10% override, but he went above and beyond because he was the one that really structured the deal, put it together, and he even went as far as writing sales copy for it, because I wanted to promote it the way that they currently had their setup, because it wasn't even a page that sold.
Yeah.
So he actually wrote a sales letter for it, and so he definitely got his 10% worth.
Yeah, so he earned his money.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay, great. So, you know, what do you think, I mean, obviously you promote information products and that sort of thing, but I mean, sort of overall, with your experience and everything, what are the easiest products and services to promote, you know, doing JV deals?
Part of the truth is, any product that sells, because that makes it, you know, 100 times easier to approach someone when you get the proven sales record, and you can approach them and you say to the list owner or whoever you're trying to do the joint venture with that this is going to be free money for you. You always want to stress the benefits of what's in it for them, because not everyone is familiar with joint ventures. You know, a lot of people on the internet are. Well, I guess it depends on which circles you travel in. You know, obviously, internet marketing people are pretty familiar with it. But if you have you mentioned gardening, again, an e-book on gardening, try to approach some other gardening sites, they might not be that familiar with joint ventures and know how they work. So there'll be some education factor there, and you got to sort of stress the benefits and say, okay, this is going to be free money for you. Like, for instance, we're in the process of working a deal with a guy who sells some software as an add-on to the popular ACT software, you know, the customer management software.
Oh, yeah.
And he wants to sell our instant sales letter product. And also, we licensed Dan Kennedy's magnetic marketing program, which would be perfect for the people that he sells to. He has a list of, like, I don't know, 2,500 people. It's a pretty small list. But he's somewhat willing to do it, and he's never mailed them anything. You know, he's never capitalized on the relationship.
Isn't that amazing?
Oh, it's absolutely amazing. And so, you know, really, if you can go to them and show them that your product has a proven sales process, it has a proven track record, and, you know, more importantly, you do everything for them. The more you can do stuff for them by providing them with, you know, a pre-done...
turnkey.
Exactly. The more turnkey you can make it, the better. People are lazy and you know, they're not going to try and go above and beyond what they need to do and what they, you know, everyone's busy doing their own thing. They all have so many fires to put out every day. They're not going to try and do something new. Some crazy guy approaches them with a joint venture.
Yeah, absolutely. I imagine that, you know, you really have, especially with how much mail and everything people get these days, and is to try to sift through all that and try to figure out who's real and who isn't, and
right.
And all that sort of thing. I mean, what kind of process do you use to try to kind of go through all of that? You know, I mean, what, you know, how do you weigh all of that when people come and approach you? I mean, you must get dozens and dozens probably a day.
Yeah, well, not dozens a day, but there's usually at least two or three a day. And I will, you know, I'll take a quick look at their website. Usually it's an online type promotion, so I'll take a look at their website real fast. if it looks like it's some kind of scam, for lack of a better word. That's as far as they'll go.
Lots of those too, boy.
Yeah. And, you know, I look at see if it looks professional, if it, you know, if it looks like it would gain my credibility, and plus if it's a fit for my market, it might not be a fit for my market. You know, I've had people approach me with things that look like they're good products, but they're just not going to be fit for my market. And then the things that we talked about, I really want to know their numbers. What percentage do they get of visitors to convert to buyers?
Right. Now, if they don't have any solid numbers, say they have a new product, is there any way that you will, you know, test with them or do anything or, you know, that sort of thing?
It depends how booked up my mailing cycle does, to tell you the truth. If it's something that I feel good about and I don't have many mailings scheduled, I might do a small test to see, and, you know, see if I can find that one little hidden gem that could be a big blockbuster. And also it depends on a couple other factors. It depends on price. If, you know, if someone's selling a $19 ebook and I get, you know, 50%, that's only, what is that, $9.50?
Mm-hmm.
No, $9.50.
Yeah, $9.50 to $19,
yeah, right. So not too appealing. you know, I have to sell an awful lot of those to make any money.
Yeah, but if they involve you in the back end or something, if there are other products that it wasn't just a one-shot deal.
Yeah, then it would make it more interesting. You know, right now we have a product called Get Fit While You Sit, and we're endorsing a supplement.
What a great name.
Yeah. And, you know, this one doesn't pay much. It pays like 20% or something, but it pays you on an ongoing basis when they keep reordering and reordering. So we like that. There's certain factors to definitely consider.
Okay. Hey, now, is there, do you have a certain method or process that you go through as far as, you know, from, say, starting from nothing, going to trying to go get a joint venture for yourself? I mean, you do go out and do prospecting on your own for joint ventures, correct?
Right. You know, really the process that I go through would be mostly locating the joint venture partner. That can be just done via search engines for the most part.
Mm-hmm.
You know, when I was first getting started, I made a list of about maybe about 15 people that I wanted to joint venture with, and, you know, become our affiliates or become our super affiliates. And I just went to the search engines and picked out people that were getting a lot of traffic because they had high rankings for the keywords that we had.
Right.
And I put them into a little spreadsheet, and I sent them out a simple email, you know, just telling them about our product and you know, that all the benefits that it has and so on. And this is before I don't think I even went to them with any numbers or anything. I just said it was a, you know, great product and you know, you can do really well with it. We got like a 40% response to our mailing.
Wow, that's incredible.
It was very tightly targeted. It was only like 15 people. So I think we got, what is that, 15, 1, 2, 3, like probably about 6 people to respond. And, you know, I think 2 of those people are still one of our top affiliates today. So that's worked out real well. Some of the people, you know, we never heard from. But one guy, we kept kind of using like, well, not one guy, but the rest of the group, we used like a Chinese torture or water torture treatment where, you know, let's say if we got an endorsement from someone as their top affiliate pick or in their top 10, you know, best affiliate programs or something, you know, I sent out a quick email to them and let them know about this. And we probably, over the year, we converted, I don't know, maybe another 3 or 4 of them into affiliates.
Great.
We got almost that entire group.
Wow, that's pretty exciting.
Yeah, it's pretty as well.
Yeah, so it's kind of a numbers thing. I mean, you know, just sort of the more you send out, the better chances are eventually you're going to have somebody that's going to kind of go along with what you want to do.
Well, when you say numbers, you mean how many contacts you have with them, or sending out like 10,000 emails?
Well, I'm not suggesting any spam or anything like that, but I'm just saying that a certain percentage of people just are never going to do it. But it would seem to me that if you target 15, 20, 30, 40 or something like that, that the more you send out, the better chances are.
Yeah, absolutely. And you can contact them when you have something new that's going on with your product, when you just did a deal. The best thing to do is when you do a deal and you can reveal some numbers, then more people fall in line. If you're trying to hook a big fish, sometimes you can go with those smaller deals like we talked about before.
Yeah, build your way up,
work your way up and use those as case studies and say, okay, this guy has 5,000 names on his list and email that he made, $2,200. You have about 100,000 names. I can't guarantee you how much you make, but if you have a good relationship with your list, you can do considerably well. Something to that effect, and you just keep on them.
Yeah, sure.
Everyone's situations, they're not constant. People change, and decision makers change as well.
Right. Now, with the who in the organization do you usually target? Is it the business owner, business development, marketing, sales owner? Who's the person? I guess really the idea maker or the idea.
I want to go with whoever can make a decision. But for the most part, I've worked with small business owners, so I'm usually working with the guy that's the head chef and the head
chief cook, bottle washer, right?
Cook and so the guy that wears all the hats,
right?
Which makes it even more imperative for you to do turnkey stuff for them and really be succinct and tell them this is free money for you.
Yeah, no, if you're doing it via an affiliate type of software program, do you recommend someone pre-signing somebody else up for something, or do you think that's going a little bit too far?
That's actually not a bad idea. I've done that before where I've signed people up and given them their affiliate number. I don't think that's going too far. I think that's even once again playing up on the fact that people are so busy that they don't have time to do this. You can say, I've already taken the liberty of signing you up, and here's your affiliate ID number, and here's the promotion you can use, and here's some, if you give them other stuff they can use, like let's say they publish e-zines, or they have content on their website, and say, also on this link are a couple sample articles you can even post up on your website and use your affiliate link there, or something to that effect. I think that would work out real well.
Now, what's the best form of first contact with a potential joint venture partner? Is it email, fax, phone, letter, postal?
It really depends on who the person is, and if you're going to try and target someone that gets tons and tons of email might not be the best way. I do read all my emails for the most part.
Yeah, I can vouch for that.
Yeah. And I get a ton of it, but if you wanted to really stand out, if you sent me a FedEx or something, that would really have a major impact on me. Or
Western Union.
Tough to get on the phone, so phone might not be the best way, but I've used pretty much all the methods.
Great. So how much time a week do you spend on pursuing joint ventures?
Really not much then. Right now, probably I'd say about an hour, and that's because most of them really come to me right now.
That's a good position to be in.
Yeah.
So, you said you before used just kind of search engines to do prospecting for JVs and that sort of thing. Do you recommend any other sort of directories or anything like that, for easing options or news?
I think, the directories for the easing are good. The easing publishers, I get pitched a lot of them, I know, for doing joint venture deals, so unless you get something really special, don't bother them. But offline, at different events, seminars, and so on, that's a great place to do it. Where you're live networking, like for instance, I cornered Alan Gardine one time, from associateprograms.com.
Mm-hmm.
I basically cornered him at a bar, and I kind of told him, I'm like, Alan, I don't know what my first words somewhere like probably like, hi, how's it going? My name's Yannick Silver, and I'm like, I just want to tell you our site converts 1 in 32 people. Oh, really?
Wow.
So he was impressed by that, and he signed up as an affiliate and pushed our product out after that.
So, you know, is there ever any issues with, you know, size compatibility, you know, with larger and smaller lists or, you know, that sort of thing? You know, do you have any, you know, when someone approaches you that's, you know, got a smaller list, something like that, to do some swaps or anything, is there any problems with that?
Typically, I won't do a swap because there's usually too many, you know, varying factors in there. Usually, their list might not be compatible with my list, or my list, my stuff might not be compatible for their list. On occasions when I have done, we never have it as a set agreement that, you know, it's kind of like I scratch your back, you scratch mine. It's never set in stone that we're going to reciprocate or vice versa. But that's not a bad way to go because, a lot of times, like for instance, the one deal with Ted Prada, the Software Secrets Exposed guy, you know, he didn't have a list at first, and we promoted him, and also a couple other big guys promoted him, so I know now he has a pretty decent sized list, so now I can cash in my chip with him and say, you know, how about promoting some of my stuff?
Yeah, you know, one turn deserves another.
Right.
Yep. So how much time on average does it usually take to get a JV up and running? I mean, if I've heard stories from, you know, 5 minutes up to, you know, it takes a whole year depending on how large the company is, so.
Yeah, that's true. I haven't worked with a big, huge company, but, you know, in internet time, when you do, you know, pretty much affiliate deals, which are joint venture deals, you can have that up and running within the day. Other times, you know, my offline joint ventures are taking me much longer than the online stuff. And offline, you know, you could look at a couple weeks is typical for just a regular deal. And like you said,
it's a matter of education too, I think, right? I mean, offline people aren't as savvy to this sort of market.
Yeah, there's education. There's also different systems that need to be set up, like tracking mechanisms to collect the money and so forth. You know, with the internet affiliate programs, it really makes joint ventures so super easy.
It's surprising how many people really don't know about it, you know, out there about affiliate programs and that sort of thing. Now, there's, you know, a lot of people that would think along those lines that they don't have any assets for a JV. I mean, what would you say to that?
Well, that's look a little bit harder. And, you know, if you don't have a product and you don't have a list, then you got to be the middleman. Or, you know, another way to do it is to actually go out and cut a deal with someone that has a product and, you know, just do a non-exclusive deal. If you can, get an exclusive deal, but you know, get non-exclusive rights to a product and rename it and just do a deal with a couple JV partners.
Okay. Great. Well, you know, a lot of times money isn't directly involved with a joint venture. Can you give some examples where this has been the case with you?
For the most part, we on a strictly profit basis, where money is involved. I'm trying to think of a time when it hasn't really been, and I don't know if I can think of one. I don't know. What other examples have you heard?
Oh, you know, it's like I said with you know, list swapping and doing other things like that. It's just that the money doesn't exchange hands. Or say, for instance, you offer your product to somebody else, you know, a resale license, and they give you their license, you know, that sort of thing.
Right. Okay. Well, yeah, we've done the. You know what? I can't remember a time when I have.
It's okay. It's not mandatory.
I don't know if it's a joint venture or not, but we did. I done swaps, so one guy gave me a list that I wanted, and I gave him retail rights to one of our products.
Mm-hmm.
So I guess in a way that would be a joint venture, but not necessarily.
Okay. Well, with you know, what percentage do you think of your revenue is a direct result of your joint venture marketing efforts? You know, how much How much of that do you think it is?
Well, if if I looked at all my solar program stuff, which I definitely think is a joint venture.
Sure.
All other thousands of affiliates, I'd say 50% of our revenue.
Wow, that's pretty stiff.
Joint venture, yeah.
That's great, though. I mean, as you can, that much of your revenue is through this sort of means. Now, when you when you're dealing with somebody or whatever, what are most of the major objections you get from businesses that don't want to participate? I mean, how do you respond to people's rejection?
They've never done it before, so it's a matter of educating them, and also their objection is, they're scared about their mailing list, that you're not going to abuse it, you're not going to do anything with it, and then also they want to know if they're going to get paid. And really, I'm talking about mostly for offline now.
Right.
You need to just assure them that, they can do the mailing or you can do the mailing, but it'll be through a bonded mail house, which means that you'll never have access to the list. And about the payment, you can structure it so they accept payments, and once an order is placed, they just fax you over or email you over the customer's name, and you fulfill so that they can see the money coming in. But in most cases, they'll just say, you just take the money after you tell them everything. And it's really just a matter of establishing rapport and trust. And if you can give them case studies and references of other people you've done this with, the better.
Great. Hey, okay, just two more questions real quick. Okay. Now, this one's a little bit long, but kind of bear with me here. If you were pulled from your home in the middle of the night and dropped on a tropical island with only a shady palm tree, a comfortable chair, a tall glass of ice-cold lemonade, and a desk with a phone, fax, copy, your computer, $300 in your PayPal account, no contact list, and you can't use your reputation, how soon could you put together a deal to buy your way off the island? So as most people don't have the context you do, it lists the resources that you collectively have so far.
Right.
So what kind of advice could you give someone starting from ground zero, step by step?
Yeah, well, a few things. One would be actually to quickly create my own product.
And so you're a firm believer in having your own product.
Yeah, I like that. The quickest product to create would be some kind of information product. So I got my computer there so I can, knock out a quick information product and do a deal with someone. Otherwise, the second one is kind of like what I alluded to before, which would be to negotiate some non-exclusive rights to a product and rename it, and then do a deal with a multiple joint venture partner to email their list.
Great. Okay, and then here's the last question. I mean, what would your best advice be for someone just starting out with joint ventures, whether it be online or offline? Do you have a secret or a trick that you'd like to share with everybody?
Really, there's no secret or trick. It's simply a matter of going out and just doing it. And,
So it's the old Nike thing, just do it.
That's exactly what it is. And, don't get hung up on little details and don't get hung up on thinking if you're doing it wrong or doing it right or not making enough of a percentage, just do it.
Great.
Yeah.
All right, Yannick, I really appreciate the time that you've spent and everything. And you guys can all go see Yannick's website at surefiremarketing.com. He's got a lot of great products and advice there. Okay, I'm going to go ahead and do you want to stop this now?